Today on Straight Talk Africa, a look at Africa's land redistribution and the fundamental issue of land inequality. How best can African countries implement land reform policies without disrupting their economies? How can countries correct historical injustices without violating fundamental human rights? That's coming up next, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello and welcome to Straight Talk Africa live from the Voice of America headquarters in Washington. I'm Vincent McCorry in for Shaka Sali. Today we're discussing the issue of land reform and justice in Africa. Now, land reform is a hot topic across South Africa as the country considers changing its constitution to allow for the expropriation of land without compensation explicitly. Now, the policy is designed to redistribute land to poor black people to tackle severe inequality 24 years after the end of apartheid. VOS Pondio reports.
Stakes are high as South Africans gear up for general elections in 2019. This will be the sixth election held since the end of the apartheid system. The African National Congress, a party which has ruled since the end of apartheid in 1994, is facing an uphill battle to retain its dominance and is proposing constitutional changes to address land issues. The fight over land reform is expected to be a fierce political battle, but a South African president, Cyril Ramaphosa, says the proposed land reform is a lawful process that seeks to correct the legacy of decades of white minority rule that stripped black people of their land.
The people of South Africa, of all races, are working together through Parliament and indeed a number of other formations and legal platforms to find a solution to this historic challenge.
In August, U.S. President Donald Trump weighed in on the issue with a controversial tweet in which he ordered U.S. officials to investigate the situation. Julius Malema, head of Economic Freedom Fighters Party, warned that his supporters would increasingly seize unoccupied land to put pressure on the government to redistribute land to black people.
The most practical way to get the land is to occupy the unoccupied land to put pressure on the state. And it has worked because now the state and the owners of the land are beginning to say maybe we should do something.
The EFF won just over 8% in the 2016 local elections and hoped to make a breakthrough in the 2019 general elections by tapping into frustrations among millions of young and poor South Africans. Black South Africans are comprised of 80% of the population, but own just 4% of the country's land, according to government records. Musi Manini, leader of Democratic Alliance, South Africa's largest opposition party, while launching its campaign ahead of a highly contested elections in 2019, told supporters in Johannesburg that the campaign will be about land reform.
There is an injustice in our country which lies at the heart of the land question. We will ensure that more black South Africans are able to own land through secure private property rights all across South Africa.
The South African government has also come under the scrutiny of groups such as AfriForum. The group CEO says they fear they could have their land taken away from them in the midst of this racially charged national debate over land reform.
The figures are being portrayed falsely as if white people own all the land, which, as I've said, is only 22%. And that is being abused to try and mobilize people to building up hatred towards the white community.
The land debate in South Africa is sparking similar sentiments in neighboring Namibia. A report tabled at the National Land Conference last month said 995,000 people out of Namibia's total population of 2.4 million live in informal settlements, and white commercial farmers own 70% of the farmland. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
Well, thanks a lot, Paul, for that report. Now, our panel of guests today are Piokole Mnyandu, a professor at Howard University here in Washington. Joining us live via Skype from Johannesburg is Ernst Roots, Deputy CEO, AfriForum, and Zinale Luane, Deputy President, Black First Land First, joins us by phone. I welcome all of you to Straight Talk Africa.
It's great to be here.
Thank you. And now, I want to start with you, Mr. Roots. First, we don't have to go back to history, but if we briefly just mention this, is a fact that colonialism, apartheid, did dispossess black South Africans. We know that even by 1913, the Native Lands Act made it even illegal for Africans to acquire land, and so they had to stay in those reserves. Do you, as an organization, acknowledge that that's an injustice? That is an injustice that needs to be corrected.
Well, yes, we acknowledge that there were injustices in South Africa. What you've just said is not completely accurate, because the Native Land Act of 1913 did not say that black people were not allowed to own property, but it did stipulate was that black people were not allowed to own property in areas that were designated to white people, and white people were not allowed to own property in black areas. So that has to be criticized. I think that is an injustice. But there's a narrative going around that under apartheid, which is a system under which people's dignity was violated, it was a system that should be scrutinized and criticized, and we should never go back to that. But the current narrative is that under apartheid, black people were not allowed to own property. That's not true. They were allowed to own property, but
they had to stay within the reserves. Only those kind of confined areas, they could never go beyond the designated area. That's, I think, what is very clear by the wordings of the Native Lands Act of 1913.
Not entirely. What the act stipulated was that there was designated areas, and they were only allowed to black people were only allowed to buy property outside of those areas with government permission, and about 3,000 black people bought farms in the two decades following on that act outside of those areas. So black people did own property, but the act, I would still argue, was an injustice. But we must just scrutinize South African history for what it really was and not for what groups like Black First, Land First pretend history was.
Mm-hmm. And Zanele, I want to talk to you about the whole question of this rainbow nation. I mean, inevitably, South Africa has ended up having black, white, yellow, and all types of complexions. Do you accept every one of those as a fellow citizens with equal rights?
Thank you so much. We are not objecting to the idea of rainbow nation in terms of embracing diversity in South Africa. Our serious objection and conviction is that historically, and not anywhere all over the world, have a population that is majority black that has been forced and hounded into reconciliation and forgiving without justice. The nation has to come to terms with the fact that black people were colonized, and it did not stop there. There was apartheid, which was legislated into law, that saw into it that black people were dispossessed and therefore were pushed into the outskirts, and the economy, means of productions, were left in the hands of a white minority that still continues to own everything and dominate in this country. We subscribe to the idea of justice before reconciliation, because if we agree that colonialism and apartheid were the greatest crimes against humanity, therefore part of ushering a new democratic dispensation has to deal with those injustices, and at the center of those injustices is the dispossession of black people, that today, more than 24 years into democracy, a minority that is white, that is not even 10%, owns 80% of the land, and black people are landless. We are basically tenants in our motherland. land and in the country of our ancestors. This is what we advocate for. As Black First Land says that diversity cannot be embraced and Rainbow Nation is impossible in a country where Black people were traded, bought every 5 years, and the minority that colonized Black people got to keep the economy and the land.
Okay. Coming back in studio, Professor Mnyandu, we do see there is an injustice, of course, a historical injustice. But since 1994, when President Mandela took leadership, the ANC announced this very elaborate reform program that was supposed to be a correction of that historical injustice. It has been that many years. What happened? Why has the process been so slow, yet the government has been in the hands of Blacks in South Africa?
Well, maybe I'll start. Confucius says there are three ways to learn. You can learn by reflection, which is the noblest. You can learn by imitation, which is the easiest. And you can learn by experience, which is the most bitterest. Apparently, it seems like South Africans have a profundity for learning through experience, bitter experience. Because they knew in 1994, our political elites of the African National Congress, they had the plans of what to do. They had the promises. The rallies were about land, free education, and so on and so forth. But they were soon met with the reality of governing a country that is intricately linked to the global economic system and the global monetary system by extension. And there, they were quickly confronted by disincentives for all sorts of developmental imperatives, including the land reform. That is why we knew President Nelson Mandela, may he rest in peace, he had made before 1994, he had talked about questions like land and redistribution, that these were imperative and it was inconceivable that they wouldn't be tackled forthwith. But of course, reality of the situation soon confronted them.
Yes.
So what our leaders did, essentially, they kicked the can of responsibility to future generations. And that is why we're here today.
And they kicked it down to future generations of even those who never lived through apartheid, the likes of Julius Malema and perhaps Zanele Luana. But Mr. Roots, talking about the whole question of the reality and the fact that all of you live in South Africa, occupy that space. You're in fact South Africans. Do you see a possibility of having that conversation devoid of race and emotion? Can you, as South Africans, talk about this issue without the question of race kind of becoming an impediment?
Yes, I think that's a very important question, and I think that is exactly what we should be doing. What we find, unfortunately, in South Africa is that there seem to be organizations and groups and constituencies who appear to be hell-bent on making this, on racializing the issue and making it an emotional issue in a way that is unnecessary. So we have, for example, we have groups like Black First, Land First, who, and many of their supporters, and groups like the EFF and Julius Malema, who make claims like, if you are white, then by definition, you are a criminal, or to quote Julius Malema accurately, white people are criminals and they should be treated as such. What we also find in South Africa is that the plea for land reform, which is something that we don't have a problem with in principle, but it's being pushed by radical groups to such an extent that it's not about correcting historical injustices anymore. It's about regarding white people as criminals and taking their land regardless of how they actually got that land. So the question should be, how did they?
Yes, and we'll talk a little more about that. But talking about whipping up certain emotions, if I may also refer to a statement you guys made, Afroforum in Washington, you seemed to be kind of striving to turn let's say, Westerners against Black South Africans. You literally said that South Africa is becoming anti-American, anti-Western, anti-white. You're a South African. Why would you want to tell the West about such things about South Africa, your own country?
Well, we're not saying that South Africa is anti-Western. We're saying that the ruling party in South Africa is anti-Western. And that's a fact. There was a proposal in South Africa by the ruling party to rename one of the main streets in the capital city after Mao Tse-tung. The ruling party wanted to rename the street in which the U.S. embassy is based after Fidel Castro. The ruling party in South Africa has stated on many occasions that the West should be blamed for problems in South Africa. The chairperson of the ruling party said publicly that they believe there's a conspiracy by the U.S. government to overthrow the South African government. So there's a continued whipping up of sentiments against the West in South Africa. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is it's being portrayed, and it's still said, and I'm sure Zanele would agree with that, that groups like Black First, Land First, who, by the way, is actually a very small group in South Africa, but groups like that continually argue that white people in South Africa aren't South Africans. They are foreigners. They are aliens, despite the fact that white people have been in South Africa. My family has been in South Africa since before the United States was founded, more than 100 years before the U.S. was founded as a country. But the argument is still white people in South Africa are Westerners and the West is the problem.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Let me go to Zanele first. Zanele, you see, your kind of group is being accused of wanting literally to strip white South Africans of their citizenship and their nationality. Do you think it is possible actually to talk about this issue of land and still accept and embrace white South Africans and say, you know, we belong to the same nation, but we need to resolve this historical injustice?
I think it's important for me to make it very clear that as Black South Africans, who are the majority in this country, we live, or rather we coexist with a white minority that is unapologetic and unrepentant and unforgiving, such as expressed through organizations as AfriForum, who naturally see Black people as slaves and people that should not see the day of liberation and freedom. You know, in South Africa, we are currently engaged in a parliamentary process, for example, to amend Section 25 of the Constitution to allow land expropriation without compensation. And Black South Africans, including political figures, have been clear that this conversation is important and land needs to be returned to Black people because we live in poverty. It's the historically correct thing to do. What does an extremist racist group such as AfriForum do? They go to the America, they go to the United Kingdom, they have recently been to Australia to push an agenda of economic terrorism, to push an agenda where global capital must disengage with South Africa as a nation because Black people are finally standing up so that we can reclaim our country. Mm. So I don't think anything that is said by AfriForum about Black people in this country should be taken into consideration because it is racist in its very nature. But what I can tell you is that the Black majority is tired in South Africa. And politicians, we have seen that they have reduced the land question, which is an emotional issue, of course, which is a very painful issue, into a political football. The land question currently now, as you know, we are going towards 2019 general election, is being used to promise land to Black people, but actually not to deliver land to Black people so that they can continue to deceive our people. The truth of the matter is that the national consensus in South Africa on the part of Black people, that it is about time that we stand up and get what is ours. Existence of the white minority in the country, we should not be dishonest about it. Because each and every white person in this country is a direct descendant of colonialists who are still not even recognizing people, even after Mandela secured the economic reign and make sure that the land that they forcefully took from Black people was not taken from them.
Zane, let's also hear from Professor Mnyandu. First, you wanted to say something, but I also wanted you to chime in on the issue of how you can take race out of this thing. It's an emotive topic.
It is.
There's no question about it.
Let's remove all pretenses.
Yeah.
Everything about South Africa that has to do about economy is racialized. Mm-hmm. You cannot discuss South Africa, developmental imperatives, how people are going to get houses, how people live, how people go to school, all the things that determine livelihood and well-being, all the things that are aspirational for a country, any normal country, they're racialized. You cannot talk about these things without talking about race. So let's, as a frame of reference, we must perhaps ourselves and our viewers at home must always know that even when it doesn't mean South Africans have racial prejudice, it means South Africans are survivors of apartheid, a system that took it almost in a triangular fashion and put white people at the top, coloureds, Indians, and 80% of the people who are the Africans at the bottom. And as such, we cannot discuss the reversal of such a system without delving into the deeper emotional, almost reticently, issues of race. Yes.
And Ernst, I mean, look at that. You listen to Professor Mnyandu here talk about there is no way you can take this emotive issue out of the race equation, because the system impoverished black South Africans, dispossessed black South Africans. It is a fact. It's a reality. Do you in any way see the best way forward where you can do justice to the black South African, but also, of course, respect their human rights and the right of South Africans or of white and other kind of complexions?
Yes, I certainly. But let me just make one comment about what Zanele said. She speaks about AfriForum being a racist organization. The big irony here is that AfriForum has more black members than Black First Land First has. So I speak for more black people sitting here than she does in South Africa. We have over 215,000 members. Black First Land First, as an organization, have something like 100, according to analysts who try to determine how many members they have, because they don't want to say. So it's really a very small, radical fringe group. In terms of the question you asked, yes, of course, there must be restitution. And we support the idea of land reform when it's about restitution, when it's about correcting injustices, not when it's about saying you are white, therefore you're not allowed to own land. The biggest problem that black people in South Africa face, to my knowledge, is the disastrous education system. South Africa's education system has been rated among the worst in the world. Literally, one study said the worst in the world, another one said the second worst in the world. And according to Statistics South Africa and many educational research groups, the biggest problem in terms of education in South Africa is not the schools that are attended mostly by white people, but black schools. And there's been studies done as to why this is a problem. And it's not white people who should be blamed. The studies have found that one of the reasons why black schools in South Africa are dysfunctional is because of teacher absenteeism. They teach on average 3.5 hours a day as opposed to 7.5 hours. Another is lack of community involvement. Another is lack of service delivery by the Department of Basic Education. Another is disruptions by unions. There's a list of problems.
But and this is a
major crisis. But this isn't, the focus isn't on fixing education for black people.
But
it's not giving black people fishing rods, it's on giving them...
But Ernst, we know the damage certain things, systems have done, even here in the United States. We know what kind of, let's say, slavery did to black Americans and in South Africa. We're not talking about things that happened many, many years ago. Apartheid just ended. We know that it had already created a very unfair education system where black people are not receiving equal quality of education with the white people in South Africa. There are obvious disparities which were a result, direct consequence of years of apartheid. Can you really correct those things today instantaneously because of a school system, because kids are going to school, or you need a much more in order to give more to black people?
Well, the point is, you cannot fix a problem such as the one that we have in South Africa with a quick fix. There's no silver bullet. There's nothing, no government policy that can be adopted today that would have the problem disappear next year. The only thing that we should be looking at is, or the most important thing that we should be looking at is long-term sustainable solutions. And the two most important long-term sustainable solutions are fixing the education system. And as I said, there are many studies as to how the current South African government has worsened black education, in black schools mostly attended by black people. And the second thing that is extremely important is proper labor and economic policy. And unfortunately, South Africa is failing at both. Yes, there were injustices with regard to land ownership, and yes, they have to be corrected. But we must be historically accurate in correcting that. So there were certain areas that were subject to dispossessions, and there were certain communities that were subject to dispossessions. But we cannot say that because, for example, person X stole a cell phone from person Y, therefore person B or person A can take a cell phone belonging to person B because person X stole something from person Y. We need to be historically accurate.
Let's allow Prof to speak, and then I'll go to Zanele. Professor Minyan.
But this is what happens when you defer imperatives in a country. I debated with myself if I should even come to the show to debate land in South Africa, because the issue of land in South Africa should be beyond debate. This is an issue that our political elites should have dealt with right off the bat. The countries that did the hard work, because there's a South African, almost psychotic South African aversion to negative opinions from the world. Yeah. Well, by South African, I mean South African political leaders. They were so scared to be looked at as radical. They were so scared to be looked at as Zambia, because we were cited failed examples in Zambia, failed examples in Mozambique. Little did we know that those countries were going through the eye of the needle, having that Damascus moment, which every serious country that has suffered dispossession along racial lines has to go. But South Africans are loath to go through this route. But unfortunately, South Africa will not be an exception. Recent events from the next generation of South Africans, the formation of all sorts of different political outfits, convinces every observer that is open, wide-eyed, that we cannot debate the issue of land any further. It needs to be taken care of. Or else, as it has always happened before in South African polity, radical elements will emerge and they'll be unstoppable. So Mr. Roots and his outfits should actually be grateful to the African National Congress and to the South African people, mm-hmm. because the South African people have been more than restrained. They are orderly in these deliberations to change the constitution. There hasn't been any violence. And this is 14 years after we were promised, mm-hmm. the South Africans were promised that there will be redress. So South Africans are actually restrained and quite liberal, given what they would like to see happen.
Zanele, what's your thought, very quickly, before we go to break?
Yeah, it's very insulting, and I think it should not be tolerated that a representative of the white minority in this country that is sitting on wealth today, such as AfriForum, can speak on the collapse of the public service system in South Africa, while through economic wealth and ownership of the land, they have created private sectors that they can only use themselves, while sabotaging black governments within the African continent, while sabotaging black governments here in South Africa, as we have seen in particular with the calls for regime change that they were part of, where we saw the black pro-radical policy president, Jacob Zuma, was removed early from general office because he was pushing an agenda of radical economic transformation that was finally going to address the needs of black people in this country. But I think it's very important to stress once again that the issue of land, we should not be discussing it with descendants of colonialists. Because in their eyes, we will always remain slaves. But what I can tell you is that a movement that I belong to, which is Black First Land First, which should not be underestimated, which is not a small group, this movement is going to be contesting the general elections next year. And if parliament and politicians continue to play political football with the issue of land, we are going to mobilize our people and we are going to liberate this country by ourselves.
Now, Zanele,
we should not be listening to AfriForum. They are not speaking on behalf of the landless people of this country. We speak on behalf of the voiceless in this country, who are still landless and live in poverty.
Zanele, but what's your position as regard ANC that has been in power since 1994? The white people have not been in power. Why didn't ANC resolve this issue for all those years?
Our position on the African National Congress, as I have said earlier, is that the ANC, during the CODESA negotiations, settled for a political compromise where they got the vote to be elected into political office while drafting with the colonizers Section 25 of the Constitution in particular, that granted the white minority property rights and domination over the economy of this country. And it is true that the African African National Congress, even today, under the leadership of the likes of Cyril Ramaphosa, has no vision in terms of where black people should be going. Right now, we are sitting with Cyril Ramaphosa, who is the puppet of imperialism, who is the mouthpiece of white monopoly capital. What we should be talking about, I think, and I think it's very important, is that how come that two families in South Africa, the Rupert family and the Oppenheimers,
okay,
if you look at their wealth combined,
okay,
it is equal to half of the black population.
We'll come back.
And that is unfair, and that is due,
yeah,
to the uneven property relations,
okay,
that we need to address.
Zana, we'll continue with that conversation. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in just a moment. So don't go away.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them. Today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies.
Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known.
It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
A reminder that we appreciate all of the audience feedback. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook. And you can also watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, guest host Vincent McCoury discusses investigative journalism in Africa. We'll take an in-depth look at exposing corruption, child exploitation, and more on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Well, today we are discussing Africa's land ownership and the challenge of land reform. Our guests today are Piwakule Nyando, a professor at Howard University in Washington. Joining us via Skype from Johannesburg, Ernest Roots, Deputy CEO, AfriForum, and Zanele Luana, Deputy President, Black First Land First, joins us by phone, also from South Africa. Now, just a little bit in the studio, Professor, at this rate, when we have this kind of extreme position, say by the Black First, Land First, and then we have AfriForum over here, can there be a possible point where people can converge and say, okay, let's talk, let's agree on something?
I'm optimistic because essentially South Africans don't hate one another. South Africans actually like one another. If we had to have a referendum today and ask black South Africans, would you like to see white people leave? I would bet you that the black South Africans would say no, a majority of our people. South Africans do not hate one another. Every day South Africans live with one another, they work with one another, but asymmetries of power. So South Africans know that the country is exceptionally wealthy. So South Africans don't have a poverty problem, they have a poverty gap problem. And that is where the problems begin. So Mr. Roots, for example, his organization has 200 plus members. Let's extrapolate that and say that's about 6%.
208,000.
That's 4.5% of the 6.5 million white South Africans. So that is a marginal organization if we are talking about numbers in South Africa. But they're very strong, they're very organized, and they're very well moneyed as a people. So I don't even oppose Mr. Roots. I like what he does because he's working for his people, for his constituency. The problem is the failure of the ANC government, failure of a narrative to be able to counter a narrative. Why doesn't the African National Congress have its own spokespeople come and lobby Congress here in America? Well, secondly, it's a failure to be able to be sagacious, to think about brave and foresighted ways to come up with new solutions. Another failure, of course, is just the failure of imagination. to come up with a composite model of land redistribution, look at other countries, and then grab their virtues, remove their, leave their vices alone, and that's where we can move forward.
And, you know, talking about looking at other countries, Mr. Roots, you know, of course, Zimbabwe hasn't been the best example. Some others have looked at countries like South Korea and said they did have a kind of some very painful land reform systems. Is it possible that in South Africa it will have to be a very painful exercise, but which will lead to justice, and that progressively and at some point all South Africans will be happy and progressive, and you know, then people will live together in harmony?
It will happen in one condition, if I may. South Africans need to know that there is one way of looking at land, circumstantial, where it's a commodity, it's an asset. Yeah. But there's another way of looking at land that we've hitherto not looked at. That is, thinking of land as a socio-ethnological feature, thinking of land as a lineage, thinking of land as something that has affected many of the dispossessed people's psychology, thinking of land as linked to mental wellness for people. So by combining these facets of conceiving of land, we'll be able to be more imaginative in knowing that this is an imperative from which we cannot run. Yeah. And I'm very optimistic that South Africans have to find a solution.
Let's hear from Mr. Roots. What do you say?
Yeah. Well, I've just two short things and then I'll answer your question. The first thing is that it's absolutely correct that the vast majority of white people and black people in South Africa are not racist and they want to live peacefully among each other. There's been many opinion surveys who have found that, and you can test it. If you walk down the street in South Africa, white and black people interact in a friendly way, and that's not a problem. There are only small minorities who are really racist. Secondly, I don't think it's fair to describe AfriForum as a small organization compared to a larger group, because by that definition, the National Rifle Association in the U.S. should also be seen as a very small organization, because there are 350 million people in the U.S., of which only a few million are members of the NRA. So that's the one thing. Then I think we should be working together. And the question is, would it be a painful process? Yes, but the irony, the big irony here is it would be a painful process, but it would mostly be a painful process for the states. And why do I say that? Because those injustices that happened in South Africa in terms of land dispossessions, that land was owned by the state, by the apartheid state. And then we had a regime change in South Africa. Now we have a new government. That land is still owned by the state. The vast majority of the land that was dispossessed, the land on which the injustices happened, is owned by the South African government. And the solution to this, if they are serious about addressing those injustices and about land reform, is to give title deeds to the people. Almost one in four people in South Africa, 23% of people in South Africa, live on land that's owned by the government. So if we are serious about land reform, it's not about taking land from white people. It's about giving the land that the state owned back to the people.
But of course, there is also, I mean, the fact that a big chunk of arable land, very fertile land, is owned by a minority white South African, while about 80% of South Africans, perhaps if you go historically, they control about maybe 13% of the land in South Africa. I mean, that's a reality too, right? Yeah. Some of that land should go back to black South Africans. Do you think that is fair?
Yes, some of the land should. But firstly, there are many. There's a big debate about the actual percentages of land ownership. And the problem with that is because the government report, the government land audit that was published, is inundated with methodological flaws in terms of calculating it. So there's a big issue there. But yes, the majority of land, or to use the term, a disproportionate amount of land is owned by white people. Mm-hmm. Now, firstly, we don't subscribe to the idea that everything should be representative of demographics. If 100% of the land is owned by black people, that's fine. The question is, how did they get the land? And I think that's the question with white people. Did they obtain the land through legal means, or what did they obtain the land through dispossessions? And that's where we need to differentiate. Yes.
Zanella, you know, if you listen carefully, I think Mr. Roots' tone has kind of changed a little bit. There is a kind of a conciliatory tone there. Do you think, actually, Zanella, you can come to a certain point, come a little lower, and have a common tenor here with the likes of Mr. Roots' organization, and just talk about how best to resolve this issue without being so emotional, without calling each other racists?
Yeah, I think, first of all, to keep on calling each other emotional about this, I think it's very patronizing, and it really downgrades the impact of land dispossession and the victims who are black people in South Africa and within the African continent as well. And then secondly, there is a big problem with working with organizations such as AfriForum. It's in fact impossible, and I'll tell you why. AfriForum has come out publicly, in fact, saying apartheid was not necessarily a crime against humanity. They have come out publicly. They have said this themselves. Secondly, AfriForum denies that 80% of the land is in the hands of a white minority in this country, right? And also, we must remember, and this is true, our country, for example, is classified as a semi-arid desert, right? That means only 20% of the land is productive, right? And this is land that is under intensive cultivation. And all this land is under the hands of a racist agricultural sector, right, owned by white farmers who produce food, in fact, not to feed the nation, who produce food so that they can export it and generate profits and feed the people of this country, in particular black people, GMOs, food that has disastrous health implications on the life of black people or any citizen, whether in South Africa or all over the world. So we are sitting with a country where perpetrators of a crime who massacred and genocided nations are denying this crime. So therefore, the point of dialogue has already collapsed. What this means then, the agenda of liberation and returning this country to black people rests on the shoulders of black people. And this is why we must continue to unite and have a clear program. There is nothing racist about redressing a historical injustice that is well documented, and no one can deny this. It is arrogance of racists such as AfriForum who can speak on international television and deny that black people are landless in South Africa.
Well, and Zanele, by the way, I did not mean to be condescending because we all get emotional. It's just a human nature. Just trying to say if there's a way in which this discussion can be without too much emotion. Now, Professor Mnyandu, this is it. I mean, the moment comes where a nation has to say enough time has passed. We have to address this issue. There is, of course, a bill in Parliament, an effort by ANC to push through Parliament an amendment to allow for land expropriation without compensation. Some people are seeing this as a kind of a campaign period kind of thing, and it could be just more of a political thing than an effort to correct an injustice. Yeah. Can ANC succeed through the law to actually correct this injustice?
Oh, well, the history of Southern Africa will teach you that every liberation organization has 20 years to stall the tide of people's unfulfilled anger regarding land. By this, I'm alluding to Zimbabwe, 20 years. Yeah. So the ANC is aware of this. The ANC was pushed in a corner. Why? So a cynical view is correct that says that, well, there was a purging in the ANC of certain elements within the Youth League that were pushing the government on land. This purging was complete, and it saw the formation of the Economic Freedom Fighters. Economic Freedom Fighters, a year later, months later, would go on to actually have 25 members of parliament. And within this ensuing activity of narrative formation about land that was compelling, that is like a red tide taken over universities and won widespread support, the ANC is worried about next year elections. The ANC knows now it cannot kick this can any further. But a pessimistic view nonetheless too about the seriousness of the ANC about this is that we have reason to be cautious about the ANC, because the same people that have been in charge of policy and economic policy sitting in the ANC's economic committee since 1992 are the same people that are in charge of government today. So a pessimistic person and an optimistic person both have reasons, good reasons to be.
Now, Mr. Roots, you know, I don't hold brief for Julius Malema, but in several places he has said that one of the fears of white South Africans is that if a lot of land was to come into the hands of black South Africans, there will become kind of a economic empowerment, which will create a kind of equality with the white people. And the white South Africans are terrified of blacks being equal to them because historically they have never seen them as equal to them. Is that...
No, that's not accurate. I mean, that argument portrayed by people like the EFF isn't accurate. Let me just make one brief point again. Mm-hmm. It was said that apartheid was recent in South Africa, and it depends on what your definition of recent is. We must remember, I was 4 years old when apartheid ended. I can't remember anything about apartheid. I have children today who are older than I was when apartheid ended. Now, certainly there are some of the consequences still remain. But in terms of the point about black, white people not wanting to live with black people or however it was framed, that's absolutely not true. There's been studies done that, for example, before the employment equity legislation in South Africa was enforced on businesses where they had to have quota systems for black people, a study was done which found that 90%, 9 out of 10 of the so-called white companies in South Africa already had programs in place to uplift black people, their black employees through training and recruitment and so forth. I think that surely there are some white racists in South Africa and surely there are some black racists in South Africa, but they are a small minority. I can say without a doubt that, let me give you an example. Let's put it this way. We represent 215,000 members. If I were to say to you now, we don't want black people to be on an equal footing with white people, I can guarantee to you there would be a massive outflux out of all our organization of white people saying that what you have said does not represent our views. We do not agree with that. We do not support you anymore. There's a very, very small minority of white people who have racist views in South Africa. The vast majority want upliftment. They want black empowerment programs. The question is, how do you do that? And I think that's where the debate is.
Yes. Zenele, briefly, do you also, I mean, I know you're also a young person compared to, those who lived through apartheid. Do you think perhaps there's that disconnect also between those who lived through apartheid and the younger generation that, cannot relate with this system, but of course can relate with the realities of today, of the economic disparities?
You know what? It's incorrect, in fact, for any white person to say that they never lived during apartheid and therefore they don't know what apartheid is, because he himself, the representative of AfriForum, is a beneficiary of apartheid. He is not poor. I'm poor, particularly because of racial segregation and not allowing people to own, black people in particular, to own means of production in this country. It was a clear white project to benefit the white race at the expense of black people. This then finds expression post-1994 as the political elite, represented in particular by the African National Congress, was unable to again put the land question at the center of the negotiations. They reached a political compromise where again the white minority continued to own the country, domination of the economy, and owning the land, and only giving us the right to vote. But I think it's important to in South Africa, 123 million hectares of land. Mm-hmm. This land is enough for all of us, black and white, in fact. Uh-huh. But it's conceptually wrong. It's conceptually wrong that when we say land expropriation without compensation, then we are being intimidated now as this is being articulated by racist organizations as a racial attack. The truth of the matter is that South Africa is a black country, and therefore ownership of the land and ownership of means of production should then project the demographics of the population. There's no debate about that, but there is a key problem where white people see black people all over the world at the bottom and them at the top. And it is through us reclaiming the land that we are going to be able then to even socially change the relations between white and black.
Okay. Let's give the chance to Professor Mnyando to say something.
I think it's pretty much a fait accompli that land redistribution is going to take place in South Africa within the next 5 years, whether the African National Congress government likes it or not. The problem now is they must get ahead of what has been a movement that has actually overtaken the country. You see, the people's existential challenges to life, basic amenities lacking, having to live in an urban area but have to walk miles to get water in a dirty stream. These things still exist in a very beautiful and extremely wealthy country of South Africa. My students at Howard University always ask, but Professor Mnyandu, we went to South Africa, it's so beautiful, but why are the black people poor? Two things the students ask. And secondly, which is more optimistic, they say, but the people are so nice. So it shows that there is goodwill in South Africa. We must be grateful for that. There is long-standing goodwill and it is an innate desire for peace. But, Brother Victor, justice is the universal call of the human spirit. Mm-hmm. All people in the world want justice. The issue of land is a matter of justice, both circumstantial and primordial, and we must take it as seriously as such. Even if the African National Congress then didn't want to take it seriously, but now it is forced to take it seriously. And I think for that, we have quite an interesting 5 years to look forward to.
Yes. Mr. Root, as Professor Mnyandu says, yeah, it looks like, it's inevitable. This issue has to be confronted. It can probably not be kicked down the street, year after year after year. But here is the question. Do you think at all, that if the law is changed, if the constitution is amended to allow for the expropriation of land without compensation, then those of you who hold large chunks of land would accept the reality of the law and allow the injustice to be corrected?
No, well, I will tell you what. No, definitely not. If that were to happen, it would have. Let me just frame it correctly. If expropriation without compensation as the method of land reform were to happen, then it would have serious, major, catastrophic consequences for South Africa. There's already indications. Just since talk about expropriation without compensation started in South Africa since the beginning of this year. Value of farms in South Africa has declined by about more than 30%. There's been studies that's been done about that. You know what's going to happen is people in South Africa who are middle class or more wealthy will leave the country. There's already a lot of talk about that. And so, the consequence of is governments losing its tax base. So they won't be able to tax people anymore, and South Africa could become a second Zimbabwe.
Is the problem the without compensation part? So if there was to be compensation, who should compensate?
Yeah, well, let me answer it this way. There are different methods that could be followed to do land reform. The one is expropriation without compensation. And what it essentially boils down to, if you listen to what the ANC is saying, the ruling party, is if you are white, then your property could be targeted and we can just take it from you without paying you. There are other methods that could be done. The one is restitution. Restitution means, that's what the word means correcting something. And there is a restitution process in South Africa. South Africa has spent, the problem is this, the South African government has spent more than 50 billion South African rands on land reform. But they have very, very little to show for it. And it was investigated by the Mutlante Commission, former President Kgalema Mutlante. And they found the biggest barrier is government corruption, is government employees stealing the money that has to go for compensating people. The problem is that the people who live on those farms, remember, it was only certain areas where dispositions took place. The people who live on those farms currently, many of them, I would say most of them, actually bought those farms later on. 20 or 30 decades after the dispositions happened, the farm was in the market and someone went and bought that land and is now farming. Now to say because someone who's not even connected to you several decades ago dispossessed someone, that's an injustice. It has to be corrected. But therefore, you who bought that land have to be punished. That's not a solution. There is money to compensate people, and that's a way in which restitution could be achieved.
Yeah. So, Zanella, you get that point there, that actually there are situations where some of farmers who actually bought this land way after other white ancestors had passed it on to other hands. And also there's that question of if there was to be a situation like Zimbabwe in South Africa, isn't that a more of a lose-lose situation? Does it benefit anybody?
I think the fundamental question we should ask ourselves, even after this debate, is should black people, not only in South Africa, but all over the African continent and in the diaspora, should we submit to the state of our being because we are afraid that those who have oppressed us for centuries are going to not be impressed and therefore are going to reiterate and punish us, whether it's through sanctions and many other things. And I argue that is completely wrong. Secondly, there is a universal principle that debt does not rot. If you steal something, you are guilty. If you buy proceeds of crime, you are as guilty as the person who stole. Now, the truth of the matter is that land was violently taken from black indigenous people in South Africa. And that's why land expropriation and self compensation should be articulated as taking this vast amount of land sitting in the hands of a minority that got it through blood and violence in this country. It's not a racial attack. It is addressing historical injustices that our democratic, or rather the ruling party, the African National Congress, has been able to unable to confront.
Okay.
We support constitutional reform.
Okay.
We support it 100%.
Thank
That's
you.
Why we are in fact calling for the removal of Section 25. But we also support mass direct organized action to confront in particular white monopoly capital, because there is no way we should be waiting for politicians to take a decision in whatever decade they will ever take it.
Okay.
That the state of black people is devastating and we can't fold our arms and submit to the enemy.
Okay, let's listen to Professor Mnyan. What's your take on that?
I'll say, look, let's not be too hard on Zimbabwe. The problems of Zimbabwe emanate from two sources. One, corruption within the process, and then handing large swaths of land to connected elites who misused it and left the land to lie fallow. And secondly, was punishment from Western sanctions, which are still in place. Indeed, I remember Foreign Affairs Secretary of the United Kingdom did tell Minister Mumbengwegwi, Minister of Foreign Affairs, when they were about to take the land, he warned them, said, do not take the land. Your own people will drag you across the streets to punish you because the sanctions will be so biting. However, this doesn't absolve the government of Zimbabwe from its widespread corruption that was involved in the process. However, Lydia Polgren of the New York Times did a story in 2012 and found that actually the land reform in Zimbabwe had boosted, had a turnaround by 2012 on tobacco, especially for rural women. They actually... income that they would have foregone to other people came to them by some of them actually earning about 5,000 and so on and so forth. Mm. But I would like us to never lose sight of land in South Africa. Yeah. Land in South Africa is an emotional issue. And my grandmother, in fact, on a personal note, she babysat me when I was four. And every time a train passed by and she was sitting on her porch on the veranda, she would cry and look down and shake her head. Do you know why? Because that train was sliding past on her land that she and her husband had owned, had farmed commercially. Mm-hmm. They used to grow grapes and all sorts of, and had all sorts of livestock. But that land was taken away. Was it taken away a long time ago? No, sir. It was taken in 1953. So land in South Africa and the dispossession had different stages. But whatever those stages mm-hmm. have been, they've brought pain and often they've brought such psychological scars on South Africans, which we never talk about, that especially when South Africans had to sit and look at the fruits of their dispossession every day.
And so it's going to be a painful process.
It's a painful one. We can't shy away from it.
Well, on that note, want to thank our guest, Piwokule Mnyando, a professor at Howard University here in Washington, Zanele Luana, Deputy President, Black First, Land First, and Ernst Roots is the Deputy CEO, AfriForum. Thank you very much, and thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next, and tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Butty. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks a lot for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa, and have a great evening.